This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome! We're here again, Diva Chronicles. It's your girl, Philly G, Felicia George, and my co-host,
Natasha Hastings. I don't have the cool Philly G.
What should Natasha's nickname be, y'all? Like, hit us up and let us know, because we got to get a nickname for Natasha.
I'm cool.
No, it's you don't want nothing? Okay, fine. Okay, cool. She ain't bad, it's cool.
I'm not cool like that. So, wait, this is episode 6.
6, yeah.
Okay, look at us getting deep in the game.
Go us. I want to pat us on the back, because we just out here killing it.
Pat, pat.
Being consistent and whatnot. Today, I think this is a pretty important topic.
I agree.
And we want to talk about the mental state needed for high performance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think especially at the professional level, you know, everybody's talented.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got, you know, something that makes them special, but it's like, what does it take to get to that next level?
Right. What's that thing that separates you?
That's often the mental side.
Yeah.
You know? So let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Where shall we begin? Sorry, y'all. I'm looking at our notes like, where should we begin? I think confidence is a good place to start, right?
Mm.
And just, I think that's everything from trusting in the work that you've put in into that moment. Because, you know, by that point, if you haven't already done it, you know what I mean? Like, I always compare that to preparing for an exam. You go into an exam stressing and not confident because you didn't prepare.
Right.
So, you know, for me, it begins with the preparation leading up to the competition and just knowing that, like, I did everything I possibly could up until this point. So now I can kind of go into autopilot based on, you know, what I did and now what I mentally have to execute.
Yeah. I think belief in self is literally the foundation that everything stands on.
Yeah.
Because you have to just have an unwavering belief in what you are capable of and what you can handle. Like, almost like your vision of yourself is, like, you know, bigger than anything that anybody else is looking at. And I think having that belief in self is what's going to dictate how you practice and then how you compete.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think there's been times where I've been less confident and less seeing the big picture.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter what I'm doing in practice. Going into a meet, it's like I've defeated myself before I've even started.
I was actually going to say that like, without that belief in self, you could physically prepare as much as you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that belief in self, that physical preparation is almost, it is garbage.
Right.
So, yeah. Totally agree.
Anything that you would say that helps you? Like, how do you believe in yourself?
Well, first let me say, finding that belief in myself is what made the difference in my career.
Right.
I've always been a hard worker, but getting to the line and believing in myself was or believing that I deserved or was good enough to be there was a block for me. But for me, that starts with how I speak to myself.
Yeah. That's what I would. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I always go back to 2013. I started working with a sports psychologist. And I'd had previous work with a sports psychologist, but this doctor in particular, you know, he ripped apart the way I was thinking and what I was saying to myself.
Yeah.
And the very first step that we did was, every negative that came into mind, change that to a positive.
Right.
And it is the thing that it seems so simple, but, and I joke, like, fake it till you make it. Like, there were times that I did have to fake it till I make it. Even if I didn't believe it, like, I had to speak in the way that I believed or what I was trying to get to.
Right.
Yeah, definitely how I speak to myself and how I always quote this quote. I don't know who said it. I should have looked up who said it, but it says, be careful how you speak to yourself because you might be listening.
Right.
And I think I actually heard that in the Great Debaters movie or something like that.
Mm.
It's one of those movies I heard it in. Probably dead ass wrong.
But I genuinely believe, like, every cell, when you speak, any thought that comes into your mind, every mm-hmm. cell in your body is responsive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything, any negativity, any energy, negative energy that you bring to that, your body and your mind is aware.
Yeah.
And that plays a role. And our body will, like, harness that in a lot of ways. So
Agreed.
Yeah. But so I think for me, I would 100% agree. And that's what I was going to say in terms of.
Oh, sorry.
You just totally stole my thunder. But I think it's. One, having awareness
mm-hmm.
of the things that you're saying to yourself and being intentional about listening to the way you speak to yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the biggest stepping stone towards that.
Because
mm-hmm. I think we don't even realize how many negative on a daily basis. And I think especially as athletes, we are in this, I need to be better, I need to do this. And we think that the only way to be better is to criticize ourselves.
Yeah.
And to constantly, like, be jabbing at ourselves.
I know this is off topic, but I can't even help but to think about how much that was manifesting in my life outside of sport.
100%, yeah.
And just, again, not believing that I was good enough for certain things. And it's those unconscious things, like mm-hmm. you said, that you're saying to yourself, you don't even realize you're
mm-hmm.
saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it does take another level of consciousness of, like, A, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And B, how are you verbalizing those things to yourself, mm-hmm. whether inaudible or audible.
Mm-hmm.
That was huge for me on the track and personally.
Yeah. So I would say it's one thing to cut out the negative, but I think it's also being at a place where you're not judging yourself. Mm-hmm. I think as an athlete, we want to be better and you want to do more, but there's an understanding of, like, you can recognize something, but not judge for it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
be more forgiving of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think the more you speak to yourself in a positive way, you'll start to foster that. And the other thing that I would say that I know for me was a huge help was just surrounding myself with people that believed in me.
Mm, girl.
And having people that really spoke into me and spoke into, you know, what they believed I could do and my potential mm-hmm. and. So I think sometimes we need someone to spark that for us,
mm-hmm.
to have us see something that we can't even see.
Yeah.
And then kind of like letting yourself build off of that. But I won't surround myself with positive people and people who I feel like are on my team.
Yeah.
And who are going to build that up. And if you ain't on my team, then you ain't. You ain't in my space.
That's an interesting. Yeah, let's go ahead and transition into that, because I have found over the years that you and I can make that separation, right?
Right.
But there are people that they're coming from a good place, but they don't realize that their language isn't conducive, or it's just not what I need, you know? So you have to almost recognize, like, there's one thing to say, I'm surrounding myself with positive people, right? But then you almost have to recognize, where in your life
mm-hmm.
does that positive person fall? Mm-hmm. So, like, I've said it on one of the previous podcasts that, like, I've had some friends where I got to table them for a period of time, and not because they're bad friends. It's just, that's language I don't need to hear right now.
Right.
That's behavior I don't need to be engaging in right now.
Yeah.
And by behavior, I mean, like, going out to happy hour.
Right. Yeah.
And happy, you know what I mean? But let's not make it sound like I'm out here taking roofies or something. Yes. but no, that is so key of, like, you know, keeping those positive voices around and knowing how to turn the negative voices off, or just the voices, the distractions, keeping those at bay. And it can be hard because it's sometimes, or most times, it's someone that you love and care about a lot. But you got to give yourself permission to create those boundaries too.
Right.
Because I have found myself that sometimes I would almost feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to get to a point where it was like, no, this is what I have to do. And if you, as my friend, my loved one, you should understand that too, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I think that also comes with that, like, I don't want to say belief in self, but like holding yourself in a certain esteem.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I deserve this.
Yeah.
And if you love me enough, you'll do this for me.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes I think we are in a place, if you're always pleasing people, you won't have the courage to kind of set that boundary.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm definitely a people pleaser. Definitely. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like, there's some, let me say, I'm a people pleaser to the people that I love.
Yeah. 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 No. Okay. I agree.
There are some people that I'm just like,
it's hard to say no.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But there are people that, it's hard to say no. It's hard for me to feel like I'm disappointing them.
Mm-hmm.
But in this life period, I don't care what you do, there has to be, there has to be some boundary, some line that is like, this is what I need to protect my space, my energy, my goals, my, you know. Yeah.
So speaking on that, so there's two books that I've read, one Essentialism and one The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F. I don't know if we're swearing on this, but they don't swear on the book cover anyway. I
wanted to read that book. I've seen that. But.
Right. But both of them basically talk about clarifying your goal and your vision or where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then dropping off everything that doesn't align with that.
Yeah.
So The Subtle Art of Not Giving a whatever, it's not saying not to care about things, but to only care about the things that align with what you are, what you think is valuable.
Yeah.
And essentialism is basically like understanding that you can't do it all.
Mm.
I can't please all these people and do this and go out for happy hour and be a gold medalist.
Yeah.
You can't do it all. So it's like, if this is where I want to be, I have to be focused and kind of moving in this direction and letting go a lot of those things that aren't serving that purpose. Yeah.
And that can be hard. It can be hard, but
I think clarity is a huge thing. Cause I think I think with athletes, a lot of the times our goals, it's easy to see, but I think let's say if you're not an athlete, some people kind of feel like, oh, I'm just floating. I don't know how to, but it's creating that clarity and what's your goal.
Mm-hmm.
What's the vision that you see for yourself and where do you want to go? But cause if you don't know where you want to go, how do you take the steps towards that? Right.
Mm.
So, it'll give you an idea of what to get rid of and, you know, so for sure. There was something that I was thinking about, but I wanted to talk about visualization.
Okay. So for me, there are different stages of visualization.
Yeah.
And I guess I can't distinguish between if it starts at practice or at home for me. I'm probably going to say practice.
How often do you visualize?
It varies. I definitely visualize more in season than, say, off season.
Yeah.
And then I definitely visualize more leading into a competition.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say when it gets to, like, competition time or close to competition time, I at least visualize at least once at practice every day. And then leading into competitions, it'll be like at the pre-meet. So at the actual track, walking the track off and visualizing everything from my steps, my breaths, where I'm making moves, you know, and then in the hotel the night before. But I think it's the biggest key for me, though, is you almost have to treat, not almost, you have to treat. Sorry. I turned the text message notifications off, but I didn't turn the fiance off. Sorry. But you have to treat visualization like practice. Yeah. So it doesn't start the night before you get to the track meet. Like, it starts at practice. And that's where I'm like, I don't know if it starts at practice or if it starts at home, because I do some visualization at home too. Mm-hmm. And I would say I do that more so in my meditation time. But it definitely starts at practice from the repetitions of, you know, there are certain workouts that I know that, like, this is geared towards the different phases of my race.
Right.
So I'll be doing it there.
Right.
I'll be doing it before a rep in practice. And then I'll do it at home. And then, like I said, going into the meets and so forth. So I don't know. I don't have like a, I got to visualize 6 times before the race this time.
Right.
But there are specific times where I'm like, okay, this is, I need to, and I definitely visualize in the call room.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Because once I'm on the track, I can't think about anything.
Right.
So that's the other thing about it. Like, I have to do it before because when the gun goes off, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. There's so many things.
And I have to, but yeah, one last thing. I have to because if I don't, then my mind will go astray.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So I should probably clarify visualization. But to me, I would say visualization is a process of going through your race.
Yeah.
Like seeing your race, feeling it.
Yeah.
And basically almost feeling like you're getting another rep in. Mm-hmm. Seeing everything that you want to do in the race,
mm-hmm.
however you want to execute it. So I visualize, I feel like same kind of thing, right? I feel like I do most of my visualization at home.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I necessarily visualize that much at practice.
Mm.
I think at practice, I'm very intentional about the things that I want to execute. So maybe it feels like a less formal visualization mm-hmm. where at home, I will do like a full, I'm getting into the blocks. Whereas mm-hmm. like maybe at practice, I'm just kind of like feeling what I want to do with my body before I do it kind of thing.
Well, see, so when I say at practice, I feel like it is a mental and physical visualization.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Because I'm almost treating those reps at practice
like a race.
Like it's the race.
Yeah.
So I'm literally like, so I'll do it before the rep,
mm-hmm.
but while I'm doing the rep as well, it's like, I'm thinking like,
I'm racing.
This, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So I guess that's more what I mean
mm-hmm.
there.
And I mean, I think that's a good point that you make where you need to practice the way you want to compete.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're basically, by the time you get to a competition, you're just doing exactly what you've been doing for the past 3, 6, 7 months. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's nothing new. And it's rehearsed and it's like, I just need to just do exactly what I've been doing.
Yeah.
But I don't visualize in the call room. Literally for me, leading into getting to the track, to the warm up, that's my like time. And I like to get to the track maybe like an hour before, mm-hmm. chill. I don't like to feel rushed. That I'd visualize then.
I'm different.
Yeah.
If I get there too early, an hour is too much time.
Yeah.
I get there with like 20 minutes Mm-mm. and then I start my warm up.
No. I want to be there. I want to like, taking, because I feel like I'm initially very anxious,
uh-huh.
and the more I sit there, the more I'm like, okay, this is happening.
The more I sit there, the more anxious I get.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
Wow.
I want to sit and take in and just feel like, okay, that's where the bathroom is, that's where the call room is. I want to see everything, feel everything, and in that time, I'll do a little visualization type of thing. But once I like headphones into warm up,
uh-huh.
it's like it's done. Like it's time. Like, but that's my like I'm starting. Like,
huh.
And through warm up, like, I just get into this really, like, I especially know if I'm going to have a good race, if I'm in that real kind of, like, blank, where I'm just moving. Like, it's just, like, I'm not trying, nothing's happening. And
yeah,
I don't even like to, when I'm warming up, have too much cues of, like, do this.
You just flow.
It's almost, yeah. It's almost like it's not
even
me.
I don't feel like I get to that point until I get to the blocks.
See, my issue is if I'm doing all that in the warm-up, I'm going to carry that into my race.
Yeah.
So I'm almost training myself to do that in the race. Because it's like I'm setting the stage of we're not thinking, we are doing.
Yeah.
And my only time to really be intentional is like that's practice time. That's like, you know, away from competition. Huh. But once I'm in a meet, it's flow. And I like my brain is shut off. But prior to, like, in my little hour before, I'm like, okay, cues, okay, lead light, da-da. My 2 or 3 things that I'll choose. But other than that, that's done.
Yeah. And we also run 2 very different races, yeah. right? Like, your race is very technical.
Right.
Extremely technical.
It's interesting, though, because I feel like when I'm racing and I'm racing at my best, I'm, again, just flowing.
No, same.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember my best races.
Yeah.
Like, I have to go back and watch them.
Right. So it's technical, but it's also just happening.
Yeah. So I feel like we're kind of encroaching on the line between visualization and meditation, because you were saying something earlier, and my, I call her my spiritual advisor, but she's always like encouraging me to like become one with the track. And like the way you were just talking, it made me feel like that. So like the day before a competition, when I'm walking the track off, that's like becoming one with the track. Yeah. Like, and it's hard for me to put into words, but it's like when a grounding, and like when I go on the line, it's almost like, and I do this in other sports too, where like I'll watch athletes' body language and I can tell, like, God, what was that Final Four game?
Oh, Virginia and who would it? Auburn?
I think it was Auburn. I'm seeing red. But it was like they were in overtime.
Yeah.
And this kid got fouled. Was it Texas Tech? It might have been Texas Tech.
I remember.
He got fouled and he's on the line. And his shots were the shots to win the game. And he got on the line and I was like, he's about to make both of those shots. Yeah. Because I looked at him and his body language, in his eyes,
yeah,
it just looked like, oh, he's about to.
Yeah.
He knows he's about to make these two shots.
Right.
And I feel like I kind of go into that same space.
Right.
But I don't get to that space because I almost feel like if I go to that space before, I will have left my race in the warm-up area.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then, so like, I remember 2015, the trials, U.S. Nationals. And honestly, that was like my first time of feeling like I elevated to this place of like, I just got on the line and my advisor was there with me too. And she was like, I just looked in your eyes and you just looked like you weren't there. And I was like, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just like, and that gun went off and I ran till, till the wheels fell off. Like, I think Allison caught me literally at the line.
Right.
Like, it was that kind of race. But I just go to a place that if I go there any sooner, it's not, I'm going to leave it in the warm up area. Like, I don't even know how to, I feel like I'm not putting it into words.
I know what you're saying though. Like, it's like you'll bring too much intensity. It's like
I almost go into like hunt mode.
Right.
Like, it's a different kind of focus. It's different kind of, and I mean, like, yeah, in the warm up area, I can't get like, I do listen to music that like, I almost get mad. So like I do like pump myself up, get hype, and I'm not doing a lot of thinking.
Right.
But that last 10 minutes in the call room, first of all, y'all don't even know how long we're held in those damn call rooms. At the Olympics, it was something like 45 minutes.
It's like a long.
But it's like that last rep, and then it's just something about, you know, getting that last rep in, and then I just slip into another space. I don't know how to.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember nothing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I feel like I'm, like you said, similar, but the way.
It just happens at a different time.
Yeah. But I feel like I'm aggressive, but it's not like, at least through my warm up, like you were saying, hunt mode.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like being like setting a stage of like, I don't know. Yeah, it's so hard to describe.
Yeah,
where I'm just in a space where,
and you can almost feel it happening too. Like,
you know, and the bad thing about it is, and this is what I feel like I need to get over, when you I start don't feel
looking for it,
when I don't feel it, I'm like, oh, it's not. Yeah. So I mean, but my goal, actually, one of my biggest goals this year is to practice it so much in practice and feeling that, so that I can call on it.
Yeah.
Or it, so that it happens more frequently.
Yeah.
Where it's not like only at championships or only in big races. Like,
but that's the thing though, right? Because there's something that you just cannot replicate.
It's true.
At a championship. Yeah. Because it's just like practice. Like, I don't care how much I practice, there's just something about competition that I cannot get at practice that I will always get at competition. I don't know if, you know, going back to the, you start looking for it. I don't know if it's even possible to find it.
Yeah.
Because it's like you get into certain atmospheres and It sounds so contradictory because I'm a huge believer of don't change anything when you get to the big stage because what you did was what got you there. But I think being on those stages, it just naturally happens, you know?
Well, I think the biggest thing is understanding that you don't have to do anything different, that it will come.
Yeah.
And I remember making my first NCAA championships and the coach, who was actually the cross-country coach, she told me at the time was like, don't do anything different than treat it like any other track meet.
Yeah.
And she was basically like, your body knows the stage that it's on. Like, everybody thinks like, oh, I'm going to the Olympics. I need to go extra hard. You don't need to go extra hard. Your body knows how to take you to that next level without you doing anything more than that.
I mean, because go back to the first thing that we talked about, that like on a cellular level, your body knows where it is, what you're saying to it, what it knows that. So there's no need to hammer that in even more.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it just in terms of trying to like verbalize that feeling of flow, I would say it's, so I believe we have this idea of ourself and with that self comes, you know, thoughts of who you are, thoughts of like worries, doubts, all of that, like this is how the world is.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I'm in those moments, it's like I'm letting go of that self. So there's no limits, there's no anything, that it's just,
I mean,
so in tune with the universe.
I equate that with the gun going off. Like there is literally like that last from, you know, at the Diamond League, they play that music
and
like, all right, they're about to do the intros. And it's like, you just feel that, that rising, like that last 3 minutes before you go into the blocks. I'm just like, shit. Like, I almost want to walk off the line. Like it gets that intense, but then the gun goes off and it's like all that pressure that just build up. It just releases. Huh, that might be why my start is so fast. But I mean, it's like you do, and I don't know if it's like, you know, I hear a lot of people equate that to running period, where like whether you're a marathoner or you're a sprinter, whatever, you just run and you feel free. But I get that feeling when the gun goes off, like just like, all right, here it is, like just, and I just go black. Ooh, I just got goosebumps. This is one we should have recorded because we're both in here.
Like, I know, like,
closing our eyes.
No, I agree. So, but you also spoke on meditation. And so do you have a formal meditation practice as well?
I don't necessarily have a formal meditation. And for me, visualization and meditation sometimes go hand in hand. But yeah, I just feel like I'm one of those meditation, prayer, whatever you're like, I feel like I can be anywhere and talk to God. I feel like I can be anywhere and meditate. So whether I sit down Indian style, drop on my knees, if I just have a moment that I'm called to do it, I'm just going to do it.
Right.
So I don't have like a traditional, like, which I have for years have said that I want to be more intentional. I am intentional in the sense that I do meditate as soon as I open my eyes. I do set my intentions for the day. But I also feel like if I'm just driving down the street, and which is kind of dangerous because sometimes I slip into a space and I'll get to my destination and be like, how did I get here?
Right, yeah.
But no, I no, I'm lying. I do sometimes intentionally lay out. I do like to, and that's probably why I do it in the morning too, because I do like to be laying down and in like a completely supine position. Is it supine or prone?
Supine is,
I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think people have this notion of what meditation is supposed to be.
It's supposed to be super formal.
Yeah. And I don't, I definitely don't think it's that, but I do think it's important to be intentional about setting time aside to be still and to be with yourself, and to kind of step outside of the regular trance of like day to day.
Yeah.
I do meditate in a more formal way where like I'll sit down and like, but like 100% I will say meditation has like transformed like my life.
Yeah.
Like, and I, in so many ways, but I think for one, I feel like meditation helps me learn. It helped me learn how to be very present.
Yeah.
Very present to really feel and feel the moment. And I think I didn't even realize how much I wasn't present prior to.
Yeah.
When you really like sit and you are totally aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
It's so like, you're like, whoa, what was I doing, you know, for those 20 minutes prior to that, you know? So in feeling that, now when I'm at the track, I can kind of slip into like, I'm not sitting down, but I can kind of be like, okay, I'm listening to the sounds. I'm feeling the ground, the track underneath me. So I've learned how to ground myself and how to become present in the moment and to like let go of, you know, all the extra thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that same way, people always think when you're meditating, you can't, if you're thinking, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
But some advice that I heard was meditation is about being able to come back and being able to have the awareness to come back. So I feel like meditation has helped me become more aware. Like we're talking about the thoughts that I have.
Yeah.
So now I can listen to the way I'm speaking to myself because I'm more aware of the thoughts. It's not just autopilot going through the day. So, and same thing, if I'm at a track meet, I can hear what I'm saying, you know what I mean? And being aware of being able to be like, okay, cool. I'm thinking I need to come back to getting in the blocks or whatever else that I'm doing. So I think meditation for all athletes is 100%.
Necessary.
Yeah. And then even this is something that I did a lot when I was younger, where go to practice or have a race that's bad and then come home and spend the next 6 hours on that bad practice. And it's like, how do you expect to recover if that's what you're doing? And so I think meditation.
But I think let's talk about that for a little while, right? Because I think all of the things that we're talking about, but especially when they're negative, like you are sucking the life out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think sometimes gets lost in, you know, the whole notion of being focused. But there is a way to be intentionally focused in a way that feeds you and in a way that's positive versus, you know, overthinking things. Mm-hmm. And because I think what you're saying is I had a bad race. Yeah. I'm like
on it for the next.
Oh my God. Like, but I do think it's important to honor your feelings.
Yeah.
So if you're upset, honor that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you got to give yourself, I'm going to be mad for 2 hours and then I got to snap out of this. I got to, what did I learn from this? What did I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why did this happen the way that it happened? But I think it does take a level of emotional maturity. To allow yourself that moment, but then snap out of it. And because, I mean, I did that for a very, very long time of just like being so upset with myself. But it's like even in that disappointment, you have to know how to take the small victories out of the disappointments.
Yeah.
But then also not internalize it to the fact where you're back to speaking those negative things to yourself.
Yeah.
And
it's
draining,
but it's draining. It is literally taking energy from you to do that.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Literally. And the crazy thing is your mind will trick you into thinking that by you dwelling on it, you're doing something good.
Yeah.
But in actuality, you're actually sucking the life out of yourself.
And I think for me, what I kind of go to now when I feel myself in that space is kind of like, okay, I'll ask myself, how is this serving me? How is this making me better?
Right.
And it's a lot of the times they're just in the asking, I'm like, it's not.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it really makes it come to the forefront. Like, okay, this isn't doing anything for me. Mm-hmm. So I think, like you said, giving yourself some space and some time. And I usually do that. An hour, 2 hours. What did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. What did I do well? Because I think if you had a bad race, let's analyze what happened. Because it's not, let's not pretend
you
like it's okay.
It happened.
Yeah.
Right.
But taking what you need to learn from it. And that's another thing. Seeing failures as lessons.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, a failure.
Yeah.
So there's something to be learned. Let's take it.
I think the thing that's coming to mind is like, you know, something in everyday life, bad happens, right? And instead of like focusing on the solution and moving on, like we're stuck mm-hmm. on, well, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. And this wouldn't have happened. If da, 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 da. And it's like, well, is that serving? Mm-hmm. Like you said, is this serving the situation? Is this serving me? You know, like, so, okay, it happened. It happened.
Yeah.
But now what do I do going forward? What is the lesson learned?
Right.
Yeah. Woo, child. So that.
Kind of going on that as well, though. And this is something that I started doing in bobsleigh. And I don't even know how I picked it up. But, and it actually helped with a lot of nerves. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why I'd be so nervous before races. But I kind of started thinking about my mortality. I actually just talked about this on my Instagram stories. But kind of really coming to grips with the fact, and this sounds weird, but coming to grips with the fact that one day I'm going to die.
All right. I want to be clear. I didn't know we were going here, but
I would be like getting ready for a bobsleigh race. I'm nervous. And it's like, man, I don't want to do this. Da, 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 da. And just in thinking about that, like one day I'm going to die. And it would make me kind of feel like, well, I might as well give everything I have to this moment. Tasha looking at me like, what? I don't know. Because the thing is, it's like this. Think about being nervous before.
It makes sense.
Right.
It does. It does. I just don't know that I'm that extreme.
But I really like.
But I feel you, though. I guess.
It's like this. Okay. If you're nervous for a race, or a lot of the times if you're nervous, you're worried about how it's going to turn out. You're worried about what people are going to think about you. You're worried about if you don't run well. And when you kind of get to this a place where it's like,
it's gonna be all right.
Yeah,
but like did you die.
Though? Yeah, like to me, it was like, well,
this ain't gonna kill me. But I don't know though. I run the 400, and
I be feeling sometimes.
I be feeling like I done died and came back to life. So I don't know about that one. Nah, Felicia, you.
I go to extremes, I guess.
Yeah, that was
maybe.
I get it though.
Yeah. I just feel like we, like you're saying, we dwell on a lot of really small things. Mm-hmm. And when you put that small thing up to something that large, you see how small it is. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, you know what? And same thing with track and field. When I'm stepping out for a race, you realize like how blessed you are to even just have the opportunity to be there.
Felicia.
So it's kind of like, okay, this isn't a threat to my life.
Where's the collection tray?
I'm just saying.
Offerings. All right. So, okay.
Like, you see where I'm going with it?
I see where you're going, but you just... one day I'm going to die. I was like, wait a minute, where are we going?
But we don't think about that stuff.
We don't.
But it's true. And that's even more reason to not waste. Actually, I don't want to say waste, but even more reason to utilize every moment that you have.
Yeah. And be present in every moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. I feel like this has like become a whole, like, we're talking about mental state of high performance, but it's like became a whole new different thing.
No, I think we're still on the topic because I think all of these things are like.
They add to
that mental state of like, these are things that you can't practice. So, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. When I think of high performance, I'm thinking of like competition day, Diamond League, Nationals, World Championships, Olympics. And these are all things that you have to be practicing way before you get to those those places. Because if you think that you're going to get there and then it just like, it doesn't work like that. Like I think it's actually more important than the physical, because I've been in places where like, I probably wasn't in as best of shape physically, but mentally, this one of the things that I think I have over my competition now. Like, yeah, I'm a little bit older, but I have physically and mentally gone to a place that you may not have tapped into yet.
Right.
And I know how to call on that. I know how to get to that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, like, one of the things I'm heavily relying on, I can talk about it now, like, coming back from having a child, that, like, I know that physically my body is going to be a lot different than it has ever been. Yeah. And I'm coming up against the hardest challenge that I have ever had in the sport. But I'm relying heavily on the place that I have mentally been, that a lot of my competitors or the newbies, rookies, whatever you want to call them, hasn't necessarily been to.
Right.
And I think that that is the thing that makes you, that's the thing that makes the LeBrons,
yeah,
LeBrons, the Michael Jordans, the Usains, like, you gotta be able to tap into that space that it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in. You just know how to turn that thing on.
Right.
Whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
For me, it's going into hunt mode. That it just worked. I mean, 2016, I had a hamstring pull. Well, not pull, strain. 3 weeks before trials.
Yeah.
And I did not know how I was going to get through the trials. And it was literally day by day. And by day three, I was like, F it.
Yeah.
And again, I went to that space where it was like, I forgot that my hamstring was injured,
right.
You know, but you got to know how to tap into that. Yeah. But it does not, it starts long before you get to the starting line.
Right. And that's the thing. I think a lot of practice is showing yourself what you're capable of, but just practicing, taking yourself to a different mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of workouts, it's like, yeah, this might be helping me physically, but what it's really giving me is a mental edge to like not feel like getting to the line, but still being able to get to the line.
Yeah.
And to like think, oh, I'm totally dead and there's no way I can run any faster, and pull it out.
And those races are actually the most satisfying ones, right?
100%.
Because there, while we're talking all of this, there are days that you get there and you're like, I don't know, but all right, let me start plugging away. Let me start
But I think that's interesting to say, though, because a lot of the times when you think, okay, I don't know how I'm going to do this, so you have no expectations.
Yeah.
So then you step into that race with no expectations, and because you aren't holding anything, you give yourself the freedom to just do whatever.
And then
you perform well. So that's a huge thing. I feel like stepping into races without that expectation.
I can say that, like, at the beginning of every season, I do set, like, time goals.
Yeah.
But when I go into every race, I don't have an expectation. And
it's
interesting because I don't know if that's changed because of, like, my coaching over the years or what. Because when I was in high school, my coach, I don't know how we have this relationship, he could give me a pace. He could tell me, like, come through the first 200 in this, come home in that. And I'm like, okay. And I will hit it to a T.
Mm-hmm.
But now I got to have my plan. And maybe that's what it was. It was a race plan.
Yeah.
But me and D2 don't necessarily speak in
time
language, but more so in execution language.
But I think execution language leaves it open to
the possibilities.
Anything. Right.
Yeah.
Because if we're saying come through in, 23, you're going to come through in 23, but maybe your body ready to go come through in 22.
Yeah.
And if it's execution, what's going to happen is what your body's ready to do. So that's
okay.
That's what I think. So I think focusing on the process of what you want to execute as opposed to focusing on the outcome, the angle.
Yeah.
The outcome matters. You know what you want, but when you're in race mode, getting ready to compete, it's how do I want to get there?
Yeah, and I think, again, in life, period, the process gets lost, right?
Because
everybody just sees the big picture, but you can't get to the big picture without focusing on the process. So I have definitely 100% found that, like, no expectations. Focus on the process. And no expectation.
When I said it
sounded really flippant just now, but it's like, I don't go into a race thinking I want to run this time.
Right.
I go into a race thinking I'm open to whatever the possibility is.
Right.
That I open myself to. But I'm definitely more so focused on the process.
Yeah.
The execution.
Yeah.
Than I want to go out here and run. Because another thing my high school coach used to always tell me, you got to win before you set a record. So, yeah. You know, and then there are even instances of like certain Olympics or certain, everybody's going to remember, unless it's like a world record or something, everybody's going to remember who won.
Right.
But they're not going to remember what time you ran.
Right.
So.
True.
It's like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've definitely had to let go of the outcome. That was another thing of like you said earlier, like being focused on the outcome, being focused on not performing well and all these little things, inconsequential yeah. things that I was focused on rather than being focused on the process.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just have, I guess, a question.
Oh, Lord.
No. But
I get nervous when people ask questions.
So tell me about, like, going into trials, like, what's your mindset? Like, because I think that's, like, a huge, you're going into knowing that, like, I, quote unquote, have to
mm-hmm.
perform. I have, like, what's the mindset going into, I need to come mm-hmm. top three on this day here.
That's so like, before I even go into that, because it's, like, being a part of Team USA, right?
Yeah.
I sometimes feel bad in saying this, and it probably speaks to why I haven't individually medaled yet, but in a lot of ways, U.S. Nationals is harder for me than the actual World Championships or
I could see that.
Olympics, and that being because we literally go into nationals in the 400 and top eight. Any person out of that final could potentially medal at the world yeah. championships.
Yeah.
So again, going into the trials or nationals, it's again your tribe knowing who you are
mm-hmm.
because I definitely go into a hunt mode.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely go into you know, the days start off where we get into camp or the meet or whatever, and everything's normal. We're all eating together. We're all training together. And then slowly but surely, I start eating by myself.
Right.
I start going to practice with the group, but I'll kind of like distance myself a little right. bit. And I don't even necessarily notice that it's happening.
Yeah.
I do.
Let me ask why. Do you know why you do that?
Because I'm going into my hunt space. Like, I'm just going to... And I do remember one particular year, there was some, like, drama going on in the group of just, like, just petty gossip
yeah.
that every group has,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I just remember intentionally, like, this ain't what I'm here for. I ain't got time for it.
Yeah.
I'm going. And I'm very much so, in a lot of ways, an empath.
You're sensitive to people's
very
energy.
Sensitive to me people's too. Energy, very sensitive to other people's feelings, mm-hmm. very sensitive. So
the reason why I asked is because I feel I'm sensitive in the same way. Mm-hmm. So, and sometimes it takes energy from me to just be around other people.
Exactly.
And so it just gets to a point where you're like, I just need to conserve my energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like, I know if I'm away from people, I will
I can transfer that energy.
Exactly.
It's so simple as yeah. being at dinner. And for me, when I'm at dinner, I'm not one of those people that, like, when we're at a track meet, we need to be talking about track all day.
Right.
So if we're at dinner
yeah.
and, like, you start talking about track, like, I start feeling that anxiety within
mm-hmm.
myself. Like, I'm at the track again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I have to get up and leave the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't have dinner with you.
Yeah.
Like, because
yeah.
I can't do this right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's also another thing where when you're around other people, you can't control them and you can't control the things that they say.
But I can control myself and
yeah.
get up from this goddamn
yeah.
table.
Yeah.
And get away. So I go into that space,
mm-hmm.
even so much so, like, my family is always there, my mom. And it took a while and I had to get over this because a little bit I felt like I was hurting my mom's feelings
mm-hmm.
because, like, I had to, like, distance myself and I think after maybe like two or three nationals she finally figured out like, oh, okay, she's, you know,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I start going to a place that it again, going back to like it starts way before
yeah
getting to, and I think that's the good thing about getting to like track meets in general a few days early, because you give yourself time to ground and get with the track, be one with the track, be one with the mission, the process. I slowly retract.
I think family is also interesting. I think family and friends also maybe because there's a loving space that we have for them, and it's hard to be this aggressive person.
Yeah, and I don't have that, that in right that.
But yeah, you know what I mean. Like, I could see how like a you having your mom at a track meet would be like. It's hard to be around her and be like, I'm so like,
I want to kill somebody.
Yeah,
right
now. And have your mom. It almost takes you out of that.
Yeah, you know?
I could definitely see that. Yeah, or even just with people that you're like. Cool
so what's
with.
That like for you though?
I feel like so early on the hurdles was, I mean, running for Canada.
Yeah,
it's not the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some ways we are at an advantage, I guess, in the sense that I don't have to peak for my trials.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like 100%, like I don't got to peak for my trials. I can kind of like build into that slowly. But 2011, 2012, the hurdles was definitely really competitive. Mm-hmm. And we had about six girls who were, so it wasn't like, I'm just going to make the team, you know? But I think at that point in time, I was the newbie coming on the scene. And so I was just like, I'm going to show everybody that I'm better than those girls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it was very similar where I was kind of just, like I said, I'm sensitive to other people's energy. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of start being more by myself just because I'm like,
it takes energy. But when that's happening, do you notice it happening? Or, because it took Mike T somebody to call me out on it and be like, yo, I see you're going to a space that I'm just going to let you rock. And I was like, I didn't realize that I was doing it, but I appreciate that.
But you know what? I feel like in general, that's the space that I'm in at track meets. Mm-hmm. So maybe I've never been called out on it because that's my like regular.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, I feel like I do it at like other meets too. And like, you know,
it's at a higher
but
level.
But it's at a higher level for sure. Especially like, you know, when we get to, because in that's the other thing, like at a regular meet, I'm not necessarily there with my training partners, right?
Right.
But
at
Nationals, we're all there. So there's this expectation that we're going to be a team.
Right.
And so it probably comes a lot from that too, where when I am on the road by myself, that expectation isn't there.
Right.
So I don't even have to think about it.
Right.
Where it's like, I might have dinner with whoever.
Right.
But I also don't train with you. We don't run the same event. We don't, you know what I mean?
No,
so I'm not over. Yeah. So it's no big deal for me to retract that way. But I think it's definitely more noticeable because A, it is Nationals.
Yeah.
And B, because I'm around a familiar group, but I have to take myself to that space. So
right. Yeah. I know so the hurdles as of late hasn't been as competitive in Canada, but I've also like just started running the 100 and I feel like that kind of like helps me just be more like, kind of just get into that space of like, I just want to show how competitive I am type of thing. So I feel like without having those extra races, it's harder to be like, take it to that next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
This is interesting because having these conversations makes me almost be outside of myself to think about it versus being in it and like how I go to that space, how I focus, how I, do you notice what other people are doing around you? Like
warming up? Mm-hmm. Not really.
Yeah,
now that,
you,
yeah.
You probably like that. You don't.
Yeah, I'm like, now that you know. Yeah. And I mean, like it's just a zone.
Yeah.
Like, and like I said, for me, it starts when I start warming up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be like, let's say, championships, like, you know, you have your little tent. And so this is what I do. Generally, I listen to soca in my chill time. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I feel like soca music, soca like Caribbean, for anybody who doesn't,
know.
I feel like soca music is just so playful, so carefree.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm like in my, like I'm prepping, it's always light. I want it to feel super light. I'm here, I'm having fun, it's a good time. Mm-hmm. And then when it's time to like start warming up, I'll switch my music.
What do you switch it to?
So it's been different years. So I've had some years where it's been the kind of like get hype, aggressive music.
If you tell me you listen to Sade, I'm about to end this podcast.
But right then now. I'm not Sade, but then I've also had some years where it's been like, it's not slow, but it's not hype. It's a really like more level bass line. But almost picture like, it's not classical either, but there's like strong musical tones. And think of like a...
Alicia, who are you?
Think of like a musical score for a movie. The build. And you know how you feel that? Okay. Anyways.
Everybody has their own...
I've had years... And that's the thing. And I couldn't even tell you...
What it was about
What
that.
It is. I would listen to it and I'd feel something and I'm like, I need to warm up to that. And I'm warming up. And the thing is, I'm warming up getting hype on some slow music. Like, really, like,
I wish I could see her right now.
Like, y'all don't even know what's about to happen. Like, really, really. And then I've also, the thing is, I've had some years where I've had to get hype aggressive music.
Yeah.
And my whole race is on that warm-up track.
Yeah.
Because
I'm so,
and I've had to, like, even sometimes I'll make playlists where it'll start with those slow music, and then at the like last little minute,
you know,
it go up.
Have you ever gotten to the line and been sleepy?
Tired.
Not like tired, but just sleeping.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, I have some of my best races like that too.
But I don't think it's true sleepiness.
It's not true sleeping. You're just like in that. But I've gotten to the line and been like, oh,
yeah,
it's gonna be a good day.
Yeah.
I don't know why that made me think of that, because I'm thinking of it and I'm like, that's going to put me to sleep. Yeah. But because I need something to get me.
But it's like, and it's not slow music. Like, I got to let you listen to a playlist at some point in time so you understand, because I still, it makes me feel something.
Mm-hmm.
So I've also
I think that's kind of what we've been talking about. Like, you're looking for that feeling, you're looking for that space, and whatever it is that takes you there, you go back to that. So.
I've also had times where I don't warm up to music.
That is a negative for
and
me.
I just, yeah. That and is... even in within that, I'm still so zoned. I'm not even aware of what's like people around me.
Like if I, no. I don't have music, it's a wrap. Like,
yeah.
I got to have music. So anybody listening out there, if you're trying to sabotage me, like.
Steal her AirPods.
You can't even do that, because I'm going to just listen to it out loud on my phone. Like, yeah, I have to have music. Have to.
Well,
if I don't have music, that's when, like, going back to that being free space, I need that music to tune out where my mind could wander.
Right.
So I need.
That's interesting.
I need music.
Yeah. Once I'm like, in my warm-up, I'm just doing my warm-up. Like, my mind ain't going... other places.
No, I need the music.
Okay, did we cover everything we wanted to?
I feel like we low-key did. Oh, we didn't talk about this piece. That was your thing.
Oh, yeah. She said that was your thing.
That was your thing, because you was like...
Okay, let's talk about it. Well, I mean, okay. I think one thing that makes great athletes, mm-hmm. is their ability to self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that even I get a lot of questions about, like, how do you stay motivated? And to me, that's you doing something when you don't feel like doing it. Or you feeling like doing something that you know you shouldn't be doing and not doing it. So I just think there's a level of teaching yourself how to have an urge to do something and not doing it. I know I want this ice cream. I'm not going to eat this ice cream. You know what I mean? Or on the flip side, within a race, you in the 400, the last 100, you want to stop. You don't want to push more.
Yeah.
But it's like it's teaching yourself to be like, those are just thoughts.
But I feel like, so much of that is a thought, but then there's also a level of, I can't do that. So there's no other way. Like, I just have to.
Right.
So, right. Like, as much as I want that ice cream, I can't have that ice cream. Or...
But because we think like that. It's like, there's no other option. Like, I understand that I feel like this, but the option doesn't feel like it's there.
You know what? Okay. So, bringing that conversation back to, like, the people around... For me, where that's most real, most relevant is... Okay, going back to the whole I'm expecting, and it is even more clear now to me going forward that I have gotten to the place that I've gotten to because there was no other way. And by that, I mean the standard, the level that I've held myself to, the thought of it not being
right
was not.
Right, exactly. It's just like, I'm going to do this.
I'm going to do this. So I feel like in order for me to successfully come back from having a child, a lot of that has to come into play. Because, like, again, I'm going into an unknown space, a challenge that I can't even imagine. But in my mind, I'm going to do this.
It's done already.
I have to do this. Yeah. It's done.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's an interesting thing. Maybe it's having that vision like, it's done already. Yeah. I just need to get there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, you're not quite sure what the future holds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's what it is, where, like, you just create so
But
clear.
That's real too, though, right? Because it is unknown. I don't know.
Well, you don't know the space in between.
Right.
That's the uncertainty. The space in between. But you know the destination. Because in your mind, like, that's, like you said, like, that's done. Mm-hmm. Making the team, go to the Olympics, that's done.
Yeah.
But it's like, what that process to that is going to look like is where, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But in the moments when it's kind of like, okay, now I have this decision to make and I feel like doing this, but I know what my destination is, so there's only one clear path here.
Yeah. I gotta feed my baby.
Yeah.
Feed my baby, but I'm going back to sleep because I gotta go to practice in the morning. I guess I didn't realize how much of that is, like, a real thing for me. I'm sorry, I'm OCD. I see something on the floor and I'm like, is that a bug? Sorry, it's just some trash. But is that something that you can learn, or is that just in your DNA, though?
I think it's a little bit of both. Because I think maybe the people who have succeeded have maybe a genetic predisposition, but I think we also train it on a daily basis.
Because I think about, like, so, well, recently, when I did that spot for the announcement, one of the things that they asked me to do, they were like, can you name all the cities that you've won medals in? Mm. And I think in my mind, and follow me where I'm about to take you, because I was like, I don't know. In my mind, I have so minimized what I do.
Mm. That's
that it is just like, this is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like I accomplished the thing, and then I accomplished it, and then I put it to the side, and it's like, okay, now I have to do the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's like going back to that piece about, like, being present and, like, getting to a certain point in my career where I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You did all of this, and you almost, like, feel... I was at a point where I felt like I hadn't accomplished anything.
I was just going to say that, because I've had moments where that's where I'm like, I haven't done anything.
And I've had to be like, when people say, oh my God, you've been to the Olympics? I'm like, yeah. But it's just so much ingrained in my mind that, like, that's, I have to do that. Like, okay.
I think that there's two sides to that, because I do see the benefit in not dwelling on success so much to say that, like, you feel like you've arrived.
Yeah.
And you don't step forward into something else.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there's a negative in that we never truly
celebrate.
We never truly celebrate those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What we are doing, and kind of give ourselves that pat on the back to say, like, you did that, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I think also in our society, it's always like next, more, mm-hmm. more, mm-hmm. more, 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 more. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily a healthy way to be, but I definitely think it's good to have a goal to be, yeah. you know, to be yeah. working towards. But I think every athlete would tell you the same thing, that they've had moments where they didn't feel like they've done enough.
Yeah.
And I'm sure even someone like Allyson Felix might even be like, had, and you would look at her and be like, look at how many medals you have. There's no way. But you know what I mean? But it's like, I don't know. That's that, I don't know, mental side of that.
So, but does that fit into like what you were saying as far as like the self-control? What was the word that you used? Response inhibition?
But in terms of like not acknowledging
not so much acknowledging my accomplishments, but just being in a space where it's like the thought of not is
right.
not
right
like it's not like right. I have to, so it will
I feel like that's its own thing.
Because there's certain conversations or certain like, well, why can't you do this? And because I just can't.
Right.
And end of story. Yeah. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Next.
I don't want to do that. I'm good. All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah. I think to me, that's just like we were talking about before, like just clarity of vision. Mm-hmm. Just being very clear about where you're going and what you want. So. I think we take it for granted.
We do.
How much we... How singular focused we are.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of energy to do what we do, and it's hard to be spread across a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Cool. We covered so much stuff.
We talked for over an hour. Is this our longest podcast yet?
Might be.
Might be. Hopefully we didn't lose you guys.
I would say, I hope we weren't just rambling.
But we truly, I feel like we both kind of went to a space on this one. Like, this is clearly something that, like...
But, you know, I just feel like, I mean, sport in general provides, like, an opportunity to, like, be so in tune with yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I hope everybody, whatever, if you find something that allows you to kind of get into a place that's, like...
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh man, I don't even know,
you know, I do where I am. About that, yeah. Not to drag this podcast on any longer, but I do worry about that. Like, how do I find, and me and my fiance talk about that a lot. How do you find that
outside of sport?
That outside of sport, because that feeling that I was talking about earlier about the gun going off and just feeling like, where in my life will I get that but satisfaction
it
again?
It is. Are you, and I say this because I write a lot too, mm-hmm. and I definitely feel it writing.
Oh, okay.
And then even when I did my TED talk, mm-hmm. I don't know who was on that stage talking to y'all, because I literally got on and it was like, it happened. Oh, you know what I mean? Okay. So I think, you know what it is? Putting yourself in a space of uncomfort, maybe, where it's like, there's something on the line. I think anytime you kind of put yourself in I'm a little bit on the edge here.
Yeah.
You have to find something more. That's maybe where that is. Good spot to end the podcast. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. We dropped some gems. Get your notebooks out.
Right.
Listen to this again.
You might want to listen to it again. Exactly.
Thanks for tuning in, y'all. Diva Chronicles.
Bye. Deuces. See you next time.